Hi everyone, welcome back to UCC's Talking Pictures podcast episode 9. I am your host Shannon. I am sick at the moment, so be prepared to stick around for 30 minutes of me sounding like I smoke 5 packs a day. I just get really bad chest infections, always get them around exams too, so I think that might mean something. But that's not what we're here to talk about today. Anyways, today is another special episode, because apparently every episode I keep calling it a special episode, because it's true, all my episodes are special. And the special part is, it's just me again. I feel like this always comes off like I don't like my guests or something, or I don't want them, but it's actually very much the opposite. They've all been so lovely, and when they're here, it also means that I don't have to do like anything for an hour. But I've definitely wanted to do a few more episodes on my own, try to get back to more content surrounding film analysis. When summer comes around, I'll get more of a structured routine down, but I'll give more details on that in the coming weeks. Anyway, this week's episode is rather unusual as I'm focusing on a specific film, which I don't think I've done before. I feel like all the solo episodes I've done have all been like industry-focused episodes, and this has nothing really to do with the news at the moment. In fact, it is rather an old film. It came out in 1999. It is a horror film. It was shot on a budget of $60,000, which is an astronomically small amount of money in terms of shooting. Yet despite its low budget, it was the first film to pioneer kind of the found footage genre. It had most people convinced that the actors were either missing or dead months beforehand, and it is one of the most profitable independent films of all time, making around 4,000 times its budget with a $250 million gross. Most films, for reference, need around 2.5 times their budget to even break even, so safe to say it was pretty successful. Anyways, the film I'm talking about, which some of you may have been able to guess and some of you might not, is The Blair Witch Project. Now, I'm not actually sure if people listening to this would have seen the film. I'd say if you're actually into movies or horror, there's a good chance you might have at least heard of it if you haven't seen it. But for other people kind of my age, I don't know if that'd be the same situation. But anyway, the film centres around three student filmmakers who go to research the legend of the mythical character, the Blair Witch, who has reportedly murdered many of the town's children over centuries in very ritualistic killings. As far as it goes, I feel like the plot doesn't sound too exciting compared to other horror films out today. It's quite standard. And while the film itself is decent, it might not hold up if it was released today, in my opinion. However, I'm actually not here to talk about the film, really. Everything I said before that was a lie. What is more fascinating than the film, and what I really want to talk about, is its marketing campaign. Now, recently I've discovered that I really like marketing. Marketing is fun. Making things for social media and promoting is fun. Everyone should do it. Well, I don't know what you'd be able to market. Maybe yourself. Believe in yourself, go you. And because of my newfound interest, I thought why not centre an episode around the greatest film marketing campaign of all time. Now, there are still notable marketing campaigns every once in a while for film. The most recent one I can think of was for the film Smile that came out last year, which you might have seen. I think it's a pretty good horror film. People just went to baseball games in America and they just smiled in a really creepy way for hours staring at the camera. And it blew up all over Twitter and TikTok and Instagram and stuff. And I'd actually recommend looking it up because I'm not doing it justice. It is kind of scary to look at, and I would be terrified if I was there and I didn't know why these people were doing it. But anyways, while marketing campaigns do exist now, and they did exist beforehand, The Blair Witch Project was unique in terms of how the producers utilised the internet to such an extent that moviegoers were convinced that the content of the film was very, very real. So before I delve into the marketing campaign and its widespread impact, I'm just going to give a bit of backstory for those who don't know about it. The idea of The Blair Witch Project basically came into being when the directors Daniel Myrick and Eduardo Sanchez realised that they're a lot more scared of documentaries that focused on the possibilities of the supernatural being real, as opposed to actual horror films where you knew that it was all fake. They put out a casting call asking for strong improvisational abilities, as the film and the actual shooting process had little to no script. Well, they did have a 35-page script that was really detailed about the film and the mythology, but there's actually no dialogue in it. All of the dialogue had to be created by the characters on the day on set. The three actors who were eventually chosen, Heather Donahue, Michael Williams and Joshua Leonard, whose names actually stay the same in the film, their characters are also called Heather, Michael and Josh, they had little to no idea what they're getting into. Heather, who I would say is the lead of the film, the one who goes out and sets to make the documentary, was actually convinced that she'd been casted for what is known as a snuff film. For those of you who don't know what a snuff film, it's basically when it's murdered on screen and distributed for entertainment purposes. That's probably all I'm ever going to talk about snuff films in this podcast. I don't know if they're real. They probably are. They're used from time to time in horror films as tropes, but I don't think I've actually heard of any real ones. I think the closest thing I can think of is the documentary Don't Fuck With Cats, which is on Netflix. But once again, not ever doing an episode on snuff films in this podcast, so I'm not even going to tell you to look it up either. Just leave them alone, please. So basically, yeah, the lead actress was worried that she was basically going to be murdered on screen, and her family all told her not to do it, and she still decided to anyway. She did bring a knife with her for the entirety of the shoot because she was camping with two other guys that she didn't know. Now, I have to say, if I was in that situation, I still wouldn't do it, knife or not. But I suppose in the end it worked out because we got a great film. So I guess it was the right choice. But just be careful of any weird casting calls you guys see out there. Now, the film was shot over a period of 8 days. And due to the low budget, it was a very unusual experience. The actors were given very little food over the days in order to heighten their agitation and add a sense of reality to their acting, which can be really clearly seen in the film. The film feels very realistic in terms of dialogue and all that, I suppose once again because they had to make it up on the day. The majority of the filming was actually done by the actors as well, with Joshua Leonard, who plays Josh, not very original, claiming he was only cast due to his ability to operate a camera. Due to the unpredictable nature of the script and the film overall, there were a lot of different tricks employed by the directors to gauge real reactions from the actors. They left notes and hints for the actors to find, giving them basically improv tips such as, Heather, your character does this today and so on, or your character feels like this. When one of the characters, Josh, I have to mention there's loads of spoilers, don't listen to this if you want to watch the film or you don't want to know what happens in the film. But anyway, when one of the characters, Josh, leaves during the film, the directors basically told him to sneak out without waking the other two actors up. And when he met him, they were like, okay, your time here is done, you can go home now. I think I read somewhere that they gave him like a free concert ticket in exchange or something like that. But anyway, that was the sort of nature of the script where they were being told kind of what to do in the day. However, the director used a lot of other stuff during the filming process, some of which I'd say are a bit more famous than what I've said previously. They would shake the actor's tent at night, they'd play sounds of children laughing outside while they try to sleep. Now, just to be aware, none of the actors actually did know this was happening. They'd been warned things were going to happen, but they hadn't been told what type of things are going to happen. At one stage in the film, Heather finds like this bundle of sticks and inside is cloth. And inside the cloth is human teeth that were actually real human teeth that came from a dentist. Now, actually, one interesting thing about this is Heather didn't open the bundle, she just found it and she was like, okay, this is weird. But then one of the directors had to run in and tell her, yeah, you need to open up, there's something in there. And inside there was just a mess of blood and human teeth and also hair from Josh's actor, who, as I said earlier, had gone missing the night before. However, the central appeal of the Blair Witch project is how it relies on the fear of the unknown. The witch is never witnessed throughout the entirety of the film. It's the kind of thing that horror lovers and critics rave about it even 20 years later. This core idea that what our mind can come up with is scarier than any images a person could create, which is something I do really agree with. I do think films that show less often tend to strike more of a fear in me because the idea of this unknowable entity is just very terrifying to me. But anyways, like I said, one of the main vocal points of the Blair Witch Project is that the witch is never witnessed, except that wasn't actually planned at the start. The Blair Witch was meant to be seen in the film, the Blair Witch being the director wearing a white pantyhose over his head. I don't know how scary that would be, but I don't know, they must have seen something in it. But because Josh, who was operating the camera, forgot to turn it to the left, they never got footage of it. However, they got Heather's genuine reaction, which comes off as much more terrifying when you realise she didn't think anyone was going to be there. I actually am going to play it now since it's one of the most famous scenes from the film, but there is a warning to maybe turn down the volume or skip ahead 30 seconds if you don't like loud noises. It can be a bit unnerving for some, so just make sure that you really want to listen to it beforehand. If you don't, feel free to skip.
Boots are at least. Oh my god, what the fuck is that? What the fuck is that?
I'm not gonna lie, that was actually really creepy for me to listen to these headphones. But yeah, basically that was the genuine reaction of the actor Heather Donahue to seeing the Blair Witch that never made it to the film just because her co-star forgot to turn the camera to the witch. Honestly, I don't know what would have happened if they had caught the footage. I wonder if they would have kept it in, because I feel like, once again, the central appeal of the film is that you can't see it. But anyways, there's just a little taste here of what the film is like. If you haven't seen it, it can be very kind of psychologically pressing at times. That being said, despite the effort that went into the filming process, the actors for the most part were pretty unbothered by the whole thing. Joshua Leonard even said that they were actually just really annoyed because they were trying to sleep, and then they'd hear whatever was going on outside and be like, okay, we have to go acting again. As fair shoots go, they end up a lot hungrier and more tired than the average person, I'd say, to such an extent that it led to tensions rising between Josh and Heather in real life, and it can also pretty much be seen in the film. Their characters really don't get on with each other. However, despite the unusual aspects of the filming process, the shoot was only a minor part of the film's success, because what came next was the marketing campaign. At the time of the film's release, the internet was relatively underutilised. Of course, social media wasn't a thing, so the idea of viral promotions wasn't really a concept the way it would be today. However, the directors Sanchez and Myrick took advantage of the idea of the internet, and they set up a website which basically acted as a place to find out more about the investigation of the three filmmakers who went missing in Maryland. There were pictures of scenes from the investigation, the stuff the police had found, background on the missing students, and interviews with the victims' families who were mourning their lost loved ones. Now, the interesting thing about this is, if someone set up a website today, we would realistically know that it's just for a film. But people weren't aware at the time that everyone featured on this website was an actor. They generally thought that the interviews with the actors and the investigators were actually real people. The filmmakers also utilised chat rooms, which at the time was basically a budding way for people to discuss their hobbies online. Basically Reddit before Reddit became a thing. I actually find chat rooms super interesting, since you can basically see people discussing like old shows in real time. And I remember seeing pictures of one chat room where they basically guessed like one of the biggest theories of Game of Thrones before it was revealed about 20 years later. So I'd love to go back and look at them, but I don't think you can find most of them now. Anyways, the chat rooms became a place for people to theorise and debate what happened to the missing filmmakers, who the Blair Witch is, was she real, was she fake? And as of 1999, when the film came out, the film reached over 160 million hits, which was a massive number. Like, really no other website at the time compared. You can't really find the chat rooms anywhere online. I try to have a look, but they just don't seem to be there. But if you have spare time and you're really interested, I would recommend checking out the website. It's closed now, but if you look at the Wayback Machine, it's actually still there. To be honest, I think it looks super fake, but you have to imagine viewing it with no knowledge of the film, no knowledge that websites could be completely made up. Like, it was released at a time where fan-made websites wasn't a thing, so if you try to look with that view, it might help a bit. Now, there were a few other things done along the way, including missing posters being put up around different places and reports of the actors' disappearances in local newspapers. I think the one that I find the funniest and the most extreme was that 1999 was the first year of IMBD, which is a website that you can look up to find out about films and casts and stuff, and I have no idea what the rules of IMBD are today. I never use it. But at the time, you could throw anything up there. And the biographies for Heather, Josh and Mike had them all listed as missing, presumed dead, which to me is really extreme. The actors were even told to lay low for a few months. It actually worked so well that Heather's mother received numerous cards expressing their condolences for her daughter's disappearance. But to top it off, a few months before the film was released, a mockumentary called Curse of the Blair Witch was released on the Sci-Fi Channel. Now, this was treated as an actual documentary, and it was a lot of people's first exposure to the supposed disappearance of the three filmmakers and the Blair Witch, which people had never heard of before. So when it was announced that the film, The Blair Witch Project, was going to be released, a lot of the audience assumed they were just viewing recovered footage from the documentary that was hinted at but never revealed. Finally, the time came around for the film to come out. It first aired at the Sundance Film Festival, and the reaction was absolutely enormous. At the start, most people who went into the film assumed it was real and left the theatre traumatised. In some cinemas, they hand out bags for people to get sick in. And I'm just going to jump in here quickly and say this does happen for certain films. if they're very gory or if the camera is expected to cause motion sickness in people, which I think might have been the case here. But it was also a case that people thought what they were seeing was real, and it elicited a very physical reaction then. The film earned $1.5 million in its first weekend across 27 theatres, which is a really big average even today. And after that, it received a wide release where it consistently earned about $20 million a week for a month. For a horror film to do that well, even now and before the inflation that's occurring at the moment, that is really high numbers. It finished its run with $250 million, but that's not including DVD sales or piracy, because I saw a lot of people online were like, oh yeah, I watched this in a bootleg of I got of it a few months before it came out, which I don't understand how that works, but good for them anyways. Now, gradually people worked out that the film wasn't real, especially as the actors started appearing on late night television shows, and gradually the filmmakers came out and said, yep, the whole thing was fabricated. However, despite the success of the film, the career of the actors never really took off. Heather won the Razzie for Worst Actress, which is basically the Oscars for bad films. The lack of roles that Heather got in her later career is something that she attributes to being so connected to the Blair Witch Project. You have to consider that she was the face of missing posters. People were convinced that she was genuinely dead. There is some sort of stigma to being attached to a film in such an unusual way. She eventually became a marijuana farmer, which is definitely a weird choice, and she even changed her name due to the association of Heather Donahue with the film. To be fair, overall it sounds like she had a rather negative experience, not with the filming, but just with the aftermath that came with it. Lionsgate, who were the production company, requested to use her likeness in the 2016 film Blair Witch, which is basically a reboot, or I suppose more of a spiritual sequel, because Heather is mentioned in the film, asking Heather basically, was it okay to use her likeness again? And it was something that she was very unsure to do so, since her name had been so tarnished. But at the same time, she kind of felt grateful that they actually reached out to her and they were like, hi, is it okay for you to use Heather Donahue again? Because we know it affected you a lot. And she ultimately did end up taking the money. But for the next 2 years, I think she became very addicted to, I'm not sure if it was drinking or drugs. I think it was drugs before she became sober again. But just, I suppose, the way the film overtook her identity as an actual person and turned her into a character never really just always left an impact on her, and she never really recovered from it in terms of career-wise or emotionally. So yeah, that was definitely a tough one for her. The other two actors, Mike just became a counsellor after, I don't think he continued into acting, and it seems like Josh is the only one steadily working, but it's undeniable that the film will probably follow them for the rest of their lives, whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. Just to top it off, the effect the Blair Witch Project had was unprecedented. It was the first found footage film to really hit the mainstream, because there was a few beforehand. I suppose Cannibal Holocaust would be the most well-known, which is actually an interesting film enough, because the director of the film was brought to court in Italy because they were convinced that he'd actually tortured the actors. He didn't, just very realistic prosthetics, but I might go into that very briefly another day. But films like Wreck, Cloverfield, VHS, and probably the most famous franchise, the Paranormal Activity movies, wouldn't exist today if it wasn't for the Blair Witch Project. The effort that went into filming, keeping the actors hidden from the public, and just the general fun that comes from having so many Easter eggs, ensured the film was like no other one that came before it. And to tell the truth, there won't ever be another film like it again. It came just at the right time, where the internet wasn't so early that people didn't have access to it, but also not too late that someone else did it before then. Like I said, looking back at the material now, to me it looks rather manufactured. It looks like someone's just making it for fun. But you have to understand that at the time, people didn't have anything to compare it to. Fake news wasn't as dominant a thing. The idea of people making a website for a film wasn't done. It relied a lot on the public's naivety and the lack of knowledge, and it paid off. I mean, if the film was made now with the same amount of effort, it would probably just be considered an average horror, maybe something that people would be into due to its unusual filming process, but other than that, there wouldn't be much interest there. Speaking as a subjective viewer, because if there's one pattern I've seen online, is that a lot of people's fear of the film stems from the mythology and the marketing of the film, rather than the film itself. If you go online and if you ask anyone from the 90s in America, I suppose, did they think the film was real? A lot of them did, and it was a very traumatizing thing for a lot of them. But speak of the film itself, personally, I think it's fine. I don't think it's that good. About half the film is a camera pointing at the ground, And there are no jump scares of gore. Not that I want jump scares of gore. I think the atmosphere is created very well. But if I had to describe the film in one word, I would say uncomfortable. It's really unnerving watching the tensions increase between the characters and watching them all become more and more unstable and aggressive with each other. The idea of being stuck out in a wood with two strangers and no food, no civilization nearby, is a very scary idea. But besides that, I think that if it was released today, people would like it a lot less. For me, reading the theories behind the film is a lot more fun. Like the idea of the witch being able to control time and space, since the geography of the film doesn't make sense. The characters end up in the same place despite walking the opposite way from it, which I think is a really creepy concept. Ultimately, I think the theories and the mythology make the viewing a lot more rewarding, but other than that, the film doesn't stand on its own. Now, just before I head off, there is a really popular theory done by the film theorist, who's a YouTube channel that I enjoy, especially their videos of Doki Doki Literature Club and their Five Nights at Freddy videos, even though I haven't played either of those games, but the whole mythology and lore behind them is very interesting. But anyway, the most popular theory, I'd say, is basically the two lads are trying to trick Heather and lure her into the woods to kill her. It's sitting at like 11 million views right now. And I think it's fun, but it ultimately doesn't really make any sense if you watch the film. But I like that theories can come from it. There was a sequel released several years later, but it was shot more like a typical horror film. And it was critically panned, though allegedly the director did have a different plan in mind. But when the film distributor saw it, they just said, no, you have to add in all this. A lot of the scenes that were added were apparently very gory and more typical horror film scenes, which probably is why the film suffers from a disjointed tone. A remake or a spiritual successor came out in 2016. And while it did indulge in a bit of a marketing campaign, I would recommend checking it out if you're interested in that kind of investigating. It was still basically the opposite of the original, with its emphasis on body horror, jump scares, and ruining the most important element of the first film, revealing way too much. Anyways, to sum it up, Blair Witch Project's marketing campaign is easily one of the greatest marketing campaigns of all time, not just for film, but in general. To make a $60,000 film and convince people that it's actually real is insane. Like, I know I've dedicated a whole episode to it, but I really can't communicate the hysteria and the reactions that came from being alive at the time and being convinced that three filmmakers had actually been killed or gone missing by a real witch. It developed a real cult following. It's often referenced today as one of the greatest horror films of all time. And I'm fairly sure that the real place is still constantly harassed by people trying to find the real Blair Witch. Not that it's something I'd ever do, I'd be too afraid, but there are people out there who really want to find her. So anyway, that's all for today's episode. I know it's a lot shorter and a bit of a different format, but I think I'll probably be doing more similar things to this over summer in terms of film discussion. I hope you guys enjoyed, especially if you're horror fans or Blair Witch fans, or if you were marketing fans. I know there are commerce students who may be listening to this who might be doing marketing, so I hope you're interested. I hope all of you have another really lovely week. Best of luck to anyone doing exams at the moment. And I am really pleased to announce that next week's episode involves another guest. I think that sigh sounded like really sad, but it was more just me laughing at myself being like, I'm not gonna have guests on it anymore, and then just having one straight after. But anyways, next week I will be interviewing the wonderful Sive Malin, who starred in Conversations with Friends and has recently set up her own production theatre company. She honestly seems to be really cool, so I'm very excited to meet her. So anyways, I hope all of you enjoy this episode and that you have a fantastic week, and maybe you'll tune in for a future one. There is a lot of news coming up in May that I'm very excited to announce. May is going to be a very busy month, but yeah, once again, thanks for listening. I'll see you guys all later, and best of luck in the exams.